Ever feel like your WordPress site is moving in slow motion? Switch to Kinsta's Managed Hosting for WordPress and watch it fly. Host your site on Google Cloud's fastest servers with worldwide data centers so your pages load instantly. Need help? WordPress experts respond in under 2 minutes and will migrate to your site for free. Try it yourself. First month free at Kinsta.com. That's Kinsta.com. Kinsta. Simply better hosting.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
But again, you know, if you're getting $150,000 to go play for the Royals or whatever, and Arkansas or LSU saying, hey, we'll pay you $250,000 to stay here, I can't speak for everybody, but I'm going back to school in that situation. You know what I mean?
Welcome into another episode of Baseball America's From Phenom to the Farm. I'm your host, Kyle Bandujo. Today, I'm talking to Jonathan Perrin, a 3-time guest of this podcast. Jonathan is a former right-hander at Oklahoma State and the Brewers organization who now works as a certified financial planner. He returned to walk me through the new NIL rules and changes in college baseball and how they'll impact every aspect of the college game, as well as how the trickle-down of these changes could affect the professional side as well. He walks me through what these changes are. I had a lot of questions. And then we're talking the winners and losers from both a player and a program perspective, how this new era of finances in college baseball will impact different types of players from superstars to fringe roster guys, as well as powerhouse programs to mid-majors. Jonathan's a great resource for interesting stuff like this, so if you enjoy this conversation, give him a follow on social media. Episodes of Phenom on the Farm drop every month. If you enjoy this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast and go check out past interviews. And also make sure to subscribe to baseballamerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. This is the last episode of Phenom on the Farm before the MLB draft. BA has you covered from mock drafts to the BA 500 scouting reports for these players. BA is always the number one resource for draft content, so it's always a great time to be subscribed. And with that, let's talk to Jonathan Perrin. All right, joining in for his third episode of From Phenom to the Farm. He was a 27th round pick of the Brewers in 2015 out of Oklahoma State. Certified financial planner, Jonathan Perrin. Jonathan, thank you so much for returning to the show.
Hey, you guys keep having me back. I appreciate you having me be here. Quick disclaimer before we get going here. This podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Does not constitute advice. The views that are shared by me and the host are not reflective of my employer, IntelliSense Investment Solutions. This is all based on reliable information at the time of this recording. IntelliSense Investment Solutions, Inc. is a registered investment advisor with the SEC, and past performance does not guarantee any future results. If you need any more information on us or our disclosures, you can look it up on IntelliSense.com.
I want to stress on a specific part of that. Specifically, views shared by the host should absolutely not be used as advice. I can't think of anyone I would want to take financial advice from less than myself, which is why I'm having you on. So we've had you on originally. We talked about your career, your run through Oklahoma State in the minor leagues, and then you came back on when minor league baseball, when we got a collective bargaining agreement to kind of to talk through the framework of that and how might that affect players at that level. And now, I guess, starting tomorrow, day of recording, little later when you're listening to this, we're having new rules, new NIL rules coming into play for the NCAA. And specifically, we're obviously here to talk about NCAA baseball. I just kind of lay out in simplest and layman's terms, what is changing about college baseball specifically as we head into the next phase of finances in baseball?
Well, there's a lot. There is a lot that's changing. Like you mentioned, we're recording here June 30th. As of tomorrow, July 1st, we are officially in the revenue sharing era of NIL for college athletics, which essentially means that based on the Judge Wilken ruling, we are now in an era where schools can provide what they call direct institutional support for talent acquisition. So essentially, the schools are now able to pay athletes, not as employees, but independent contractors, to play at their school. So this is going to be a completely different dynamic than anything we've ever seen before. And not to mention that 11.7 scholarship limit that has been in place previously is now going to be all the way up to 34 total scholarships. So every roster spot can be fully funded if the university chooses to do so, to have every single player on a full ride scholarship, more similar to what you saw in football and basketball in the previous era.
Now, with that, with the 34, there will be a lot of me like asking you, hey, can you give me some clarity here? The 34 is also a hard roster limit, correct? To where at the end of semester, you can have no more than 34 players on your roster, which is different than from the 11.7 days where there were, you know, you had a certain, you know, some programs had a certain like active guys or travel guys, but there was not that hard cap of this is how many players on your roster, correct?
Essentially, yes. It's more of a soft cap at this point. There are some players that are grandfathered in. So if you were already on the roster as of, you know, early April of last year, there is a grandfathering in within this settlement. That was a big part of the back and forth with this ruling. So it's not a hard cap yet, but that is what seems to be where we're trending, where eventually we're going to get to a point where it will be a hard cap, you know, 34 guys coming in versus, you know, where previously you could have upwards of 50 or 60 guys in the fall camp if you wanted to. So the roster limits are going to start to shrink, but we're kind of in this tweener period still in the moment. But it eventually is looking like it's going to get to that harder cap of 34 players.
So we've been in the NIL era for a while now, and we have seen, even in college baseball, big name deals, big name transfers, you know, LSU, I think about that, Tommy White, Paul Skeens, title team, things like that. Guys essentially getting paid more in a year the cost of a four-year scholarship. So it's not really as impactful how that 11.7 is divvied out. I kind of want to start with like who, player wise, because we're going to look at this in kind of a four prong way. You are a former P4 player at Oklahoma State, so it feels weird saying P4, but in baseball, kind of P2.5 at this point. So you're a former P4 player, former minor league baseball player. You're obviously a certified financial planner, and then you are someone with rooting interest. You would like to see Oklahoma State in Omaha every year if you had your way. Who,
full-blown donor, I would consider it at this point.
Who, program-wise and player-wise, who do things change the most for here? Like, who would your biggest winners be, and is there a loser in this scenario in terms of programs or types of player?
Great question. I'll start with the programs. The biggest winner, the SEC. It just means more down there. There are certainly levels to this when it comes to levels of investment, when it comes to the NIL, and even, quite frankly, legislation at the state level. I mean, you're seeing the state of Arkansas has already said that they are not going to impose state income taxes on NIL income. Georgia has got the Kirby Smart rule in their state House of Representatives to where they are looking at removing state income tax from NIL payments. The SEC, I mean, they've won, I think it's what, like seven straight NCAA baseball titles at this point. They have the most money. They have the most resources. And I think you can see within the transfer portal of the types of players that they're getting. They are just offering numbers that schools and other conferences, quite frankly, just can't offer. So the SEC is definitely in its own league when it comes to the type of money they're willing to spend. And I think that shows up on the field. It's already shown up on the field over the last few years. Then you've kind of got your ACC, Big 12, Big 10, kind of in that next tier down as far as, you know, kind of fighting it over there. You know, within football, it's, you know, SEC, Big 10. You know, the Big 10 doesn't necessarily invest in baseball the same way it does in football. So you really do have some levels as far as, within even the P4 schools, the SEC has just shown a willingness to spend head and shoulders above really the rest of the country when it comes to talent acquisition. And then when you're talking about the players and kind of the winners and losers, the biggest losers are going to be kind of your mid-majors, your smaller conference schools who just don't have those types of resources or are having to fundraise. You've seen a lot of these guys. Murray State had a player just recently get in the portal and go into Ole Miss, right? So if you can't beat them, pay them and come to your school, right? So that's a kind of an example there. And then also just your fringe guys that maybe, a guy like me who's a preferred walk-on as a freshman. College baseball is getting older. If you're going to get opportunities, it's like, why would we bring a preferred walk-on on when I can go get a guy out of, the Missouri Valley or the Sun Belt who hit, 350 last year or threw 80 innings. I got proven production. So I think, the trickle-down effect of like those fringe players, especially those guys are going to be the ones that are going to get boxed out. And then from the mid-major teams, it's just really hard to keep your best players. It's just hard to keep that core group of contributing players together because there's people out there willing to pay money to get them in the portal and take a shot on them at one of the bigger schools.
So when we get into types of players, I want to look at this at the getting kids to campus and keeping kids on campus in the traditional means first. So out of high school and then after draft year, draft eligible sophomores and juniors, things like that. From that perspective, obviously every year they're the kids who are as we've seen even before NIL, they're the kids who are just never making it to campus. Jackson Holiday, kids like that. And then there's the fringe signability guys, the high seven figure guys, the high six figure guys, down to, everyone's got kind of a different number. Do you see now more kids, more draft prospects out of high school making it to campus than ever at this point? Like, just with the money that'll be, if you're a draft guy, the money is probably there for you in some NIL format in college. You don't, there's no more worrying about seemingly what your scholarship looks like, because like 80, even 80, 90% somewhere still means you're taking some cost, whereas now it seems like that's all taken care of no matter what. Coaches don't have to worry about that. So do you see the draft becoming, I wouldn't say less relevant, but like essentially more college guys than ever, fewer high school guys than ever?
That's a great question. I think the trend has been in general towards more college guys. I think, the high school outside of, your super prospects, the Holidays, et cetera, I think there's the idea of there's way more risk involved with taking a player like that. But the conversation has really shifted. I think agents, parents, players are getting smarter about this. And they're seeing what's happening at the college game. The college game is getting older. The open transfer portal, again, going back to my point, it's like, why would I give a freshman innings when I can go take a guy in the portal from maybe a mid-major or a smaller P4 school who's got proven production? It's really hard right now for freshmen to get playing time, especially at your top schools, where if you're a guy that's considering a seven-figure or high six-figure bonus, chances are you're probably ending up in the SEC, Big 12, ACC. So from there, if you're not going to sign and go to Pro Bowl, now you're immediately in a win-now environment where you have to produce. And so I think from a developmental standpoint, that shift initially was, my number is higher on the signability because I can get paid to go to school. But now I think agents and parents are starting to realize, well, hang on a second. Like, if my end goal is to be a Major League Baseball player and get to the big leagues, what is going to give me the best opportunity to make that happen? And for a lot of players that are in that high six-figure or low seven-figure bonus area, if you sign for that much money, you're going to get a minimum of two full seasons of opportunity in a pro organization. So that's, 300, 400 at bats as a position player, 80 to 100 innings, 20 plus starts as a pitcher, right? And so the developmental process, you have more time, you're going to get more opportunity to fail. versus if you go to school, I mean, if you don't put up, you are going to get buried very quickly. And then it's really hard to get yourself back out of that hole if you don't get off to a hot start as a freshman, right? So I think there is a little bit more inherent risk for a high-level high school prospect to go to school. And I think that conversation is starting to shift more going into this year's draft compared to other years past, where I think parents were very much like, well, why would I sign for $800,000? I can go make 150 at school. Well, okay, but if you throw 7 innings as a freshman at Texas, you're in the portal anyways, and now you almost have to completely restart your momentum and build up your draft prospect status again. So, the conversation is definitely shifting, on that signability conversation way more this year than it ever has in the past, despite the numbers being what they are, on the NIL side.
With that signability question, do you look when you're talking to players or just in, kind of in general, are players factoring in what getting, 'cause often first round picks, high round picks, they get those opportunities. Often they end up in the big leagues, at least getting some sort of shot, unless it's some sort of complete lower level flame out. Are players factoring in what 3 years of service time gets you paid, what getting to arbitration gets you paid, because those numbers are higher than almost anyone's getting an NIL? Or is it an apples to apples of, okay, this is what I would make, plus I get, by signing, plus I get the opportunity, plus here's the guaranteed money over here in college? Like, how far in advance are players looking at, this is what my earning potential is if I sign versus if I go to college?
I think it's really player by player, but what I will say is these kids are way smarter than we were coming out of high school. They've got more access to information. I think, some people may disagree with me on me this, but with me on this, but I think they're more mature. They're having much more mature conversations. They're weighing their options a little bit further. But yes, I think that's exactly the right approach. I mean, it takes on average about 8 to 10 years from the day you sign to reach arbitration. Right? That's getting through all your minor leagues, through your kind of option years, getting 3 full seasons of service time to get to that next seven-figure payday, right? If you get 7 figures in the draft, it may be 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years before you see another 2-comma check, when you reach ARB 1 or maybe even ARB 2 if you're a reliever. So I think the agents are doing a better job of educating these guys on like what this actually is. And then there's also these conversations of whether you're a high school kid or maybe like a sophomore who's in a really good spot at a mid-major school. And we've had conversations with those guys too, where it's like, hey, I'm seeing these, $200,000 to $400,000 NIL offers, but I also might be a top 2 round pick next year. And it's like, I'm in a good spot. I know I'm going to be a weekend starter where I'm at. Does that give me a better opportunity to go make $2 or $3 million in the draft? Or do I want to go chase that, $200,000 or $300,000 in NIL money? And every player has to come to their own conclusion. My job and as a CFP and the agent's job is really just to give the menu options to them. Each family is going to come to their own conclusion, but we really just try to educate families and players on, hey, this is what it looks like over here. This is what it looks like on pro ball. These are the factors that you have to weigh. And then whatever your personal decision is, you're going to do what you think is best for you. And we just want to make sure that you go into that situation with your eyes wide open. And then you're fully committed to that decision. So you don't go back and you're not looking over your shoulder playing the what if game, because that's not going to help anybody in the future as you're trying to go navigate the rest of your career.
So let's talk about a different form of a different part of the draft calculus, and it stick to like P2, P4 programs, keeping their juniors around as seniors. So not say like your Murray States who are just trying to keep guys from jumping to bigger conferences, but it's guys like yourself who when we talked about your career, after you had a good junior year, were able to kind of leverage it into a little more scholarship for yourself to stick around Oklahoma State for another year. With those juniors, maybe the guys who say you're like 11 to 20 round, round 11 to round 20, you're 125 to 150 bonus guys. How does that calculus change for those guys now? Because, it was, hey, you can take this 125 now, or you can sign next year for 10. but you can play out your senior year and all that now. Whereas, you know, maybe the bonus could be that maybe you're now a seventh round pick, but you're a $10,000 signed guy as a senior, but you had a full boat for that senior year and you have NIL compensation to make up for that draft. You see more kids staying on campus.
This is the situation that I am just so curious to see how it plays out in this year's draft, because this is a new set of rules. And with the draft coming up in a couple weeks, I'm really interested to see how that day two, you know, rounds, like you said, the back half of the draft, post 10th round, where, you know, that $150,000 bonus is not what it used to be, because there's a lot of kids in college baseball this year that are going to make more than that. So I'm really, really curious with the juniors and especially the draft eligible sophomores that are out there. Like, the draft eligible sophomores have so much leverage. I mean, that's the best spot you could possibly be in if you can get to that situation, because you just, it's heads I win, tails you lose, you know, for those guys. But from the juniors, especially if you're in the SEC, I'm so curious to see, like, those 15th, 16th, 17th round picks, do they sign? Because if I'm, you know, LSU, Arkansas, Ole Miss, these teams that have money to spend, it seems like it's going to be pretty easy to keep some of those guys around for a senior year and have them run back and go and re-up and go into the draft, because you may actually end up getting more money staying in school now than that $150,000 in the, you know, past the 10th round. You know, unless the team is willing to go above and tap into their bonus pool. So I'm so curious. I don't know if I have a good answer for you there, but that is probably the thing I'm going to be watching the most as we go through this draft cycle, is to see how many guys in these P4 schools don't sign in the 11th through 20th round, because they're just like, I can make the same money and go back to school and finish my degree. You know, why wouldn't I take that route? So I think that's going to be a really interesting development that I'm so curious to see how that shakes out here over the next few weeks.
And with all this, as someone who just loves college baseball, and you see how things are going with the portal with NIL, it does seem like, and you know, you touched on this earlier, that mid-major conferences, smaller programs are turning in sort of a developmental minor league for the bigger schools. And like, using your, you know, your personal case, there's, you know, in this world, there's a good chance that you don't wind up at Oklahoma State, that you take a scholarship to a mid-major program or something like that. And then, you know, you try to put in two good years and then maybe, transfer into Oklahoma State. Do you see these changes as making it more likely that we will have an unofficial minor league baseball system in college baseball, where the specifically those P2 conferences, you know, and then you tap in Big 12, Big 10, turn into essentially the big leagues and are feeding off of your Murray States, your UTSAs, things like that?
I think that's 100% the case. Unfortunately, it's just money talks, and like, you can't fault a kid for wanting to go get a bag. You know, you showcase and you have a Cinderella team, and you know, your best players are probably not going to stay in that program. I think, you know, you saw like UCLA with Coach Savage, they talked about those guys kind of all banded together, right? And they were like, hey, we're in this together. We're going to stick together. Like, this is going to be our thing, you know, unless you have a group of players who are just rallying around each other like that and are just really committed to being like a multi-year member of that program, I really just don't see any way where we don't basically have a three-tier system, because the SEC can kind of even take from the Big 12 and the Big 10. Like, they can snipe from anywhere. But even with the,
I think it's also easier to have the rally around thing when you're at a UCLA and you graduate from UCLA. Just in general, if I leave with that degree, it sets my life up better. But like, we've seen high level athletes get poached from Stanford. Which, yes, having a Stanford degree is like having a lottery ticket, like a likely to hit lottery ticket. And in the run up to the College World Series, there was all the thing about, you know, Murray State Stadium holds 800 people and something like that. The other way that these mid majors cannot compete, like, I've gone to some UTSA baseball games, nice mid major ballpark, you know, good fan turnout and stuff, but it's not going to play at Alex Box. And they're like, the financial component is one thing, but the, like, you know, it's going from double A to playing in the stadium with a third deck in a lot of these cases. Like, it's almost an impossible experience to compete with as well. And degree, just in terms of, if you're thinking about your future, your alumni network at LSU or at Vanderbilt is a lot more significant than your alumni network. I feel like we're bagging on Murray State, but at your alumni network at Murray State.
Yeah, and look, one of my buddies is a Murray State baseball alum, and we were talking through the whole World Series, talking about the transfer stuff, and, like, you know, their alumni base is super fired up. But to your point, like, they just don't have the same deep pockets that an LSU or Arkansas, Texas have. Like, it just, that just is the reality of the situation. And you try to do the best you can, keep your roster together, but again, you cannot fault a kid for trying to go make the maximum of his opportunity, you know, within that very short window that every athlete has. And that's just an unfortunate reality of how this is evolving from a transfer portal standpoint. But again, I think, to your point, like, the elite academic schools, like your Vanderbilt, Stanford's, UCLA's, they have a little bit more of a fighting chance, probably because the value of those degrees are a little bit amped up, and that's a stickier component that I think will help. But yeah, I mean, if you're just a smaller state school that doesn't have really deep pockets and you have a great run, I mean, it used to be, hey, you run to Omaha and the coach either gets a contract extension or he's going somewhere else. Well, now it's the coach either gets a contract extension or he's going somewhere else, and your all entire starting nine is under the same, you know, thinking about the same thing. So it's just going to be really hard, I think, for anybody outside of really the SEC and ACC to keep a roster together. And even within that, I mean, you're still seeing, I mean, at Oklahoma State, I think we had a dozen plus guys in the portal this year, you know, and that's not including the draft guys. So it's just, in general, the demands on the recruiting base and the alumni donor base are just going to be so much higher here on a year-over-year basis moving forward.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at Shopify.com/RedCircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.
Is there any sort of, like, budget way for a mid-major to build in your mind? Like, how does a mid-major or just any non-P2 school build a program versus catching lightning in a bottle? Because, like, you and I were messaging during the College World Series or just during the postseason about how, like, teams like Murray State, UTSA, like they found a way to catch lightning in a bottle, build a roster. Like it says something to have a bunch of, I've talked about this a lot, like have a bunch of dogs on your team, guys who, you know, are invested in the program or invested in each other, like that, you know, can beat a group of hired guns if you go into a regional. But replicating that every year of like, how do we, you know, how do we bring in 30 dogs that are going to fight for each other and like build up this program? Because a lot of times in the past, when we saw programs make a run like that, it's because that's a heavy senior team or a bunch of JUCO transfers who bonded tight over 2 years. And it's like now there seems to be no way to keep the momentum going. Like, how does a Murray State or a UTSA keep things going? Like, how do you build a stable program as a mid-major when you are so rife to any little bit of success is just going to be leached off of?
Well, I think the same playbook is going to be the recipe for success. You got to be old and you got to play a lot of baseball. And so if you can keep guys together, and then junior college, I think, is going to be a huge component of that, where you're able to go get guys that have played a couple years of junior college baseball. They played in just a bunch of games. They just have played a lot of baseball. I think that's still the formula. But it, like you said, you're going to be almost an immediate victim of your own success. Like, you know, I love how ESPN's got squeeze play and they're broadcasting every game. But as soon as you make a regional, you're on track, man. Everybody's on ESPN. And like the jig is up, right?
Got to be texting Mike Rooney to not talk about your players. Just ignore us.
Yes. Like if I'm a mid-major guy, this coach, I want the ESPN feed to be shut down. You know, I want the track man off when I'm playing, because it's the secret's going to be out. The genie's going to be out of the bottle. Like that guy that you had tucked away in your bullpen that throws 98 and comes in the ninth inning, everybody's going to know who that guy is after you win a regional, right? So it is just so hard. But you know, again, if you can be old and you can have guys that have played a lot of baseball, that's going to give you the best chance to make a run. But sustaining that, like, you're going to have just some really strong, I think, junior college relationships. You're going to have really strong relationships with your players. I think you're going to see those player those player coaches, right? Like the guy from Murray State, like, just seems like those guys just love him, right? So it's just like any loyalty and, you know, that personal relationship that you can build as best you can just really seems to be the best way you can possibly try and do that. But it's just going to be so hard for those types of schools moving forward.
Do you ever see the portal becoming less chaotic, like less widespread free agency? Because as you know, like when I was playing, I almost transferred out as a freshman. Like I wasn't super, I thought there might be better opportunity. One of the most personally validating things of my life was eventually becoming a contributor at where I was playing. I know everything's different for everyone, but there's also some component to, like, if you stay at a school for 4 years, like I did, like you did, having that bond, the teammates, the friendships, like those are the guys that you're still catching up with 15 years later, versus now it just seems very freewheeling. There's not as much the thought of, and this is a generalization, but there, for a lot of guys, it does not seem as much the thought of like, I want to go somewhere, even if like top, I want to go somewhere for 3 years and make a run at Omaha and have the best time, versus as soon as each year ends, I've got to evaluate all my options. Like, do you, at least from the top conferences, do you ever feel like, do you see a scenario where the market starts stabilizing a bit? And there, you know, there are always kids who leave before NIL, before the transfer portal. Kids leave every year. I'm going down to junior college. I'm going down to D2. I'm finding some opportunity somewhere. Not everyone plays. There's always at the end of the season someone who's like, I got to get out of here. But I think what the portal has changed is there are more guys who contributed and have big years who are now getting out of here, even at big schools. There are guys from Oklahoma State and TCU and LSU who are saying, I'm going to go find something else. Is that just the world we live in now? Or do you think that eventually gets scaled back in some form or fashion?
I think It's a little bit of both. I do think eventually we're going to get to a point where you just can't have 13, 1400 college baseball players in the transfer portal, which I think within a week of it opening, we were at 1200, and I don't know what the final total was. I know it's kind of closed. I think it closed yesterday if I remember correctly, but yeah, it's gonna have to stabilize. And I think some of this is gonna be like as we see more bad experiences with guys who are big prospects, where they go for a year, they don't play, they get in the portal, and they realize, okay, well, I'm not going P4 to P4. Like that doesn't happen as if you don't play. I think you're gonna see that type of transfer probably start to diminish a little bit just because players, families, their agents, advisors are like, hey, like there's no market for you out there, right? Like you're gonna have to take a step back or multiple steps back of like where you're playing or even the NIL money that you're able to command because you had 15 at bats as a freshman or you threw 6 innings or whatever that is. So I think that part, I would hope that people get a little bit smarter about, hey, like there's no market for you there. Like we need to stay where we're at and try to develop and play here. But as far as the guys getting in the portal, like they had success and they're going to go try and be a free agent essentially, I don't know if that's going to slow down unless the money, starts to drop or there's more rules that get put into place. But if you've got open transfer, especially if you haven't used it yet, and you go off and you hit 330 with 10 pumps or you throw 100 innings with a bunch of strikeouts, it's going to be really hard for, unless you're already at a major school that's willing to put up the money to keep you there. It's really hard to tell a 19, 21-year-old kid, like, hey, like, don't go chase $250,000 in the portal right now. Like,
You've got to stay at Middle Tennessee State. You need to finish this out. This is important for you.
yeah, it's, and it's tough, but that goes back to, especially like if you're at a Coastal Carolina or, somewhere like that where quality school, just not in the P4. It's like, okay, yeah, maybe we can go get $300,000-$400,000 in the portal. But if I'm a projected top 2 round pick next year, for example, like maybe I should stay, take less money on the front end in the NIL world. But I know that if I do what I'm supposed to do in a good spot, in a situation I'm comfortable with, a coaching staff that I trust, I can go make $2+ million in the draft next year and set myself up for the best possible position to be a big leaguer, which is where all the real money is actually at. And I think that's the conversation that more agents, players, and families are starting to have. And that's where I think you might start to see a little bit of a decline in the overall numbers in the portal. But unfortunately, I think overall, this is just kind of the world we're going to be living in under this set of rules for the foreseeable future.
On the high end, your big, your Paul Skenes, your transfers that can change a program, bring you to Omaha, whatever. Where does the compensation stop? Because like if all these SEC baseball teams are trying to outbid each other and stuff, what other compensation levers could start being pulled? Like I've seen, there are college football players with Lamborghinis and cars and things like that. Reggie Bush got his Heisman taken away for a house for his parents getting a house, but like is stuff like that on the table of like, hey, not only are we bringing you in and you have this NIL deal, but can we get your parents a game day condo? Can we get, hey, your brother just started driving where, Baton Rouge Ford is gonna deck him out in a new Raptor. Like, are there guardrails on it? Like, where does this end, basically?
That's a great question. And the short answer is yes. Everything you just mentioned had been happening before NIL was actually a thing and will continue to happen, right? I mean, the
Is that
Carly's
on the up and up now, though, or is it st is or do
Yes.
we still have bag men in some form or fashion?
There's, I think in all forms, look, if there's rules, people are going to break them. And I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but like there is always going to, we're going to hear stories, but for the most part, now it's just out in plain sight. Now, Carlises are a really popular one on the football and basketball side. You don't see that quite as much on the baseball side. It's just not quite as marketable, right? But for the LSUs, Arkansas's, places like that, That's stuff that we've seen, guys getting the car lease, basically comp, they get a dealer car, whatever that looks like. Now that's all still taxable. Now guys tend to forget that. That's a fringe benefit. They still got to pay taxes on that. But yes, I mean, you see the Austin Lamborghini dealership basically giving dealer cars to some of the top players and things like that. Those are all things that are, available to guys. And it's the direct institutional support or the rev share money is kind of one pot, and that's a honestly the smaller pot for baseball because they're not going to get nearly as much as football or basketball. But then the donor money, right? The brand deals, the car dealerships, the local businesses, that are huge fans and supporters. That's where a lot of this stuff is coming from. And it's going to continue. I think those fringe benefits outside of just the actual cash comp, they're going to continue to be there. It has to be, regulatory, right? And there are like reasonable compensation methods. Like, for example, if I'm a car dealership and I want to pay a player $1 million to shoot one commercial, but I only pay the local radio guy $20,000. That's going to get flagged by the new compliance regime, and they're going to investigate that. The true pay for play is still technically illegal. They say they're going to investigate it. I think in most cases it's going to be we're going to push this envelope until somebody slaps us on the wrist type of deal. But some of those fringe benefits, so to speak, very much exist in today's world. And they're supposed to be on the up and up. You should be signing contracts, all those different things.
You mentioned the taxable part of it. I want to get into, like, you gave a talk to Oklahoma State football recently, and that's one of the things that, especially at 19-20, you're not thinking about the long term. Like, that's just a flat number. You're not thinking about the taxes. You're also not often not thinking as much about the long term ramifications of what's if you get $100,000, you say you come away with $100,000 net in college. That sound, I mean, at 20 years old, that's a enormous amount of money. When you're older, when you have kids, when you have family or whatever, it's how are you talking to young kids who are just their eyes are bulging with dollar signs of what is the most of the same way you would with a kid who signs for $400,000 out of high school? Like, what is the best way for kids to, one, make this money, make this an impactful thing on their life, and also avoid leaving college and being in trouble with Uncle Sam?
Yes, and we have seen that already. The last thing you want is to be on a payment plan with the IRS before you get to draft day. And we have unfortunately had a couple guys that we've worked through on more on the football side, but baseball side too, where it's just like, you did not set anything aside. We had a guy bragging, he made $150,000 last year. It's like, okay, great, man, that's awesome. Who filed your taxes? And you just get the blank stare back, right? So really just starting with the basic fundamentals, because that financial literacy is really lacking, in US high schools. Like most high schools don't even have any sort of like business or finance, budgeting courses. So really starting from the basics, like some guys haven't even had a bank account before they get onto campus. So showing them, hey, how do you set up a bank account? How do you set up direct deposit? How much should you be putting aside? It's all 1099 money, right? So they're not withholding anything. So you should be putting aside, 30 plus percent, because Uncle Sam's going to come get his when you go to file. Very, very basic stuff, I'm very proud to be an OSU alumni because they've done a really good job putting resources in place, from financial, tax, legal resources that guys have numbers to call. They still got to pick up the phone, they still got to reach out. But, I think the schools understand that, like, hey, we are not gonna allow these kids to fail. And if you do fail, it's on you because they've been putting the resources in place. The term I like to use, I use the same type of term with draft families where, they're signing for that high, six figure, low seven figure bonus. It's not life changing money, but it's life trajectory changing money. You are going to be, if you're in a program for 3 or 4 years making NIL money plus your scholarship, you are not just going to be in the top 1% of your age bracket for net worth. You're going to be in the top 0.1% if you do it correctly, if you save money. you put money into a Roth IRA, you open an LLC. And then on top of that, like all the skills that these guys are building, it's the business of you, Inc., right? You're your own little business who just happens to be an independent contractor of whatever school you're playing for. So being able to have that professionalism about you and just building some of those skills that whether or not you play a day of professional sports or not are going to serve you for the long term is really important. And it's an amazing opportunity for these young men and women. There's a lot of risk involved, you know, for these institutions. But I think for the most part, they're trying their best to do right by these kids and put resources around them to have success. Because in this point in time, it is just such an amazing opportunity for these young men and women. But they have to kind of take some of these steps and use the resources around them to ensure that they're doing things the right way.
The last thing I want to touch on is the effect on minor league baseball, or just kind of generally the state of minor league baseball. And the way, just from my purview, it feels like while there are limited jobs, less opportunity, guys are getting less of a crack at this. But between, if you're playing minor league baseball, if you are a drafted player, it means probably that you were either a quote, a bonus baby out of high school, where you received a significant sum up front, or you were a college player who either received a decent amount at the draft, or even if you didn't, even if you were a senior sign, you were probably a guy who in some form or fashion got compensated decently in college if you were a draftable player. I'm sure there are exceptions to that rule. And then on top of that, because of how minor league baseball is now structured, with what they're having to provide with housing, with what they're having to provide with food, less money is coming out of your pocket as a player. As someone who played in the minor leagues, was not a super high bonus guy, has this, in terms of just standard of living, is this the best time across the board to be a minor league baseball player?
Yeah, it's so much better, post 22, CBA updates, which was what we talked about last time I was on here. You're getting paid 11 months out of the year now. It's not great, but it's way better than it was. You know, if you're in A ball for the full season, you're going to make right around 30 grand, so it's not, and if you're a single guy with no living expenses, cause you're living in team housing, like really not that bad. If we're being honest, it's not great, but it's, you do not have, the same overhead, right? And you probably came from a school where all that money that you were making was discretionary. You got your housing paid for, everything was already taken care of for you, on the college side. As you get into pro ball, you're kind of in that same situation, right? You've got the ability to have team housing. The money's a little bit better. The insurance is good, on the minor league side. They've got a 401k now across the board for minor leaguers. So everything from that side is improved compared to where it was, for sure. And then it's also the focus on development versus winning, right? Like in the minor leagues, we're playing, those are practice games. No one, like, we want to win, but like from an organizational standpoint, they're not looking at the wins and losses. They're looking at the data. They're looking at how the guys performed, versus in college, it's win now and get tomorrow and the next day. That's all we're here to do. Because if we don't win, that coach gets fired and he can't feed his family. So it's a very different look to it versus the college and the pro game. And the conditions overall, facilities, food, et cetera, it's all significantly better today than it was even, 3 or 4 years ago in the minor leagues, and continuing to get better. The only question being, as we start to get ready for this next CBA round, is are they going to make another cut? Are they going to combine low and high A? Are they going to reduce the rounds again? Those are all things that are out there potentially on the chopping block. So that could be a factor as we come up, after the 2026 season and this current CBA expires. But overall, yes, like the situations in the minor leagues, the conditions are much, much better than they were in the very recent past, which should give guys a little bit more incentive, hopefully, to sign. But again, if you're getting 150 grand to go play for the Royals or whatever, and Arkansas or LSU saying, hey, we'll pay you 250 to stay here, I can't speak for everybody, but I'm going back to school in that situation. You know what I mean?
The last thing I want to leave, I want to give you just the opportunity to be a fan. You an OSU alum, you want to see Oklahoma State back in Omaha. I am assuming, just judging by how you guys feel about baseball in Stillwater, that Oklahoma State will be fairly well funded in terms of scholarships, NIL, things like that. What's your 5-year plan for the Pokes? Like, what do you want to see out of the program?
Well, we made a great hire with Coach Hawksworth at the pitching coach position after my pitching coach Rob Walton retired after 27 fantastic seasons of coaching. You know, 13 of them in Stillwater. Really excited. Heard a ton of really good things about him. A couple of my former teammates are on the staff, you know, Mark Ginther, Trey Cobb, my old roommate, Vic.
It's when you know you're getting old. It's
yeah,
when
Vic,
you're,
Vic
guys
Romero,
are you guys are coaches now.
So, you know, from a coaching standpoint, obviously with Coach Holiday still running the show, I think we're in good hands. The thing that I go back to, not just with Oklahoma State, but just kind of across the board, is going to be the donor fatigue. There's a lot being asked of your donors right now, because it's, the question was, you know, hey, how much money do we need? As much as you possibly can give, right? Like, that's really the answer for the foreseeable future when it comes to NIL. Thank God for us, we have that beautiful $60 million facility in Obrate Stadium, so we don't have to raise money to go do facility work right now. Other programs that may need facility upgrades on top of keeping the roster together with NIL, that's just a compounded problem when it comes to donor fatigue. But for us, for the 5-year plan is to continue to scout, you know, and really work both the portal, junior college and high school levels. It was cool. When I was in Stillwater, you know, I think Coach Hawksworth had been on staff for all of 2 days and he was already on the road recruiting. You know, basically everybody that wasn't working the camp that day was out on the road talking to players. And that's just going to be the name of the game. It's all about, you know, who can we get in here? Who's going to be a good fit for, you know, for us, for Cowboy baseball, but for any program. And it's going to be an arms race for the foreseeable future. And, you know, I'm doing everything I can to help contribute, you know, knocking on doors and making phone calls for the golf tournament and whatnot. But it is, it's going to be very much a financial arms race when it comes to being competitive. And then also, I think that culture component of, you know, how can we get guys to buy into being a part of, you know, Cowboy family and wanting to stay here and be a part of something great and get Oklahoma State back to Omaha. I think it's going to be a combination of those two things where we got to get the money. And then if we could keep the money in the family as best we can, you know, that's going to lead us to, you know, or any program really to the best chance for success.
Yeah. The programs that figure out, you know, getting transfers in, you know, winning the financial arms race, like, it's all essential, but the programs who figure out how to keep your kids those are the ones that are going to win. You know, I feel like those are going to be your consistent contenders, because that's a huge aspect,
right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you bleed orange, you know, and you're willing to turn down $50,000, $100,000 extra to stay, you know, and compete for the same team, you know, that's only going to compound on itself. More guys that do that, you know, the ball kind of keeps rolling. You know, you kind of set that standard of like, hey, we're here, this is what we want to be, this is where we want to be. But it's hard to do because the money is really real for these guys. But I 100% agree with you. As best you can to keep guys in that program for 2, 3, 4 years, that's only going to serve you well and probably more powerfully than it ever has in the past due to this kind of free agency almost that we've got in college baseball at this point.
Jonathan, this has been great. You post a lot of good content on social media just about like the financial aspects of sports. If anyone wanted to follow you, get in contact with you, where could they do that?
Yeah, Instagram, Twitter's jperrin46, LinkedIn, Jonathan Perrin, CFP. We're also on our website at intellisense.com. So feel free to check us out. We'd love to chat with anybody that's got questions. This is something I love to talk about, love to work on. But always good chatting with you, Kyle. And thanks for having me on again, my man.
Yeah, man. Always good to connect. Appreciate you coming on the show.
Thank you.
And that's it for today's episode. Big thanks to Jonathan Perrin for stopping by and walking us through these new changes in college baseball. If you enjoyed this one, subscribe wherever you get your podcast, and make sure to subscribe to baseballamerica.com and the BA podcast feed for all amateur baseball and prospect news. We'll catch you in a month. Thanks for listening.
Hi, Drew and Jonathan Scott here. American Family Insurance can help protect your dream home for whatever comes next. You can live in your own oasis or your own clubhouse. Whatever you choose, get the right coverage. Save up to 23% by bundling home and auto. Life's better when you're under American Family's roof. Insure carefully, dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. Products not available in every state. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies. 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.